from EWTN, the Global Catholic Network. This is EWTN News Nightly.
Good evening. I'm Montse Alvarado. Welcome to a special Holy Week edition of EWTN News Nightly. After publishing a full calendar of Holy Week and Easter liturgies, the Vatican announced today that different cardinals will preside over the Chrism Mass, the Mass of the Lord's Supper, and the Good Friday liturgy. Whether or not Pope Francis will participate in or preside over any liturgies will depend on his health. EWTN Vatican journalist Benedict Siedegren has more.
With the celebration of Palm Sunday, Holy Week has begun.
Benedici.
Last year, Pope Francis abstained from reading the homily due to his health condition, and this year, once again, the Holy Father was unable to regularly preside over the celebration as he continues his convalescence. The Holy See has confirmed Easter liturgies in the coming days, but there is no indication yet whether the Pope will take part in the celebrations, and if so, how.
Riscopriamo la necessità di dedicarci a una preghiera.
Let us rediscover our need to cultivate prayer that is not obligatory and functional, but freely chosen, tranquil and prolonged. Brothers, how is your prayer life? Let us return to adoration. Have you been forgetting to adore the Lord? Let us return to the prayer of the heart.
Torniamo alla preghiera del cuore.
On the morning of Holy Thursday, the Chrism Mass will be presided over by Cardinal Domenico Calcagno in St. Peter's Basilica. At this Mass, the bishop will bless three types of oils: the sacred chrism, the oil of the catechumens, and the oil of the sick. These are the oils that will be used throughout the course of the liturgical year to celebrate the sacraments. Later in the evening, Cardinal Mauro Gambetti will celebrate the Holy Mass of the Lord's Supper in St. Peter's Basilica. Good Friday is an aliturgical day because the Holy Mass isn't celebrated. In the afternoon, a solemn celebration of the Passion of the Lord will be presided over by Cardinal Claudio Guggerotti in St. Peter's Basilica. Following the tradition, in the evening, the Way of the Cross will take place at the Colosseum. It will be led by Cardinal Baldassare Reina.
Più sfruttati e dimenticati.
Gesù, fa che ti riconosca.
Fratelli e sorelle.
Brothers and sisters, Jesus is our Pasch. He is the one who brings us from darkness into light, who is bound to us forever, who rescues us from the abyss of sin and death and draws us into the radiant realm of forgiveness and eternal life. Brothers and sisters, let us look up to him. Let us welcome Jesus, the God of life, into our lives. And today, once again, say yes to him.
Oggi il nostro sì.
Holy Saturday is always a day of sorrow and sadness marked by silence, mourning, and reflection. Christians around the world meditate on Jesus of Nazareth in the tomb and on his descent into hell while they await his resurrection with prayer and fasting.
Benedici questo fuoco nuovo.
The Easter Vigil Mass in St. Peter's Basilica will be celebrated at 7:30 p.m. in the evening.
Per voi.
On Easter Sunday, Holy Mass will be celebrated in St. Peter's Square.
In nomine Patris et Filii et Spiritus Sancti.
At noon, from the central loggia of St. Peter's Basilica, the Holy Father usually gives his Urbi et Orbi blessing, meaning to the city and to the world, to the faithful in Rome and across the globe.
Patris et Filii et Spiritus Sancti.
Whether or not Pope Francis will give his blessing this year will depend on his health. Easter Monday, often called Monday of the Angel, commemorates the angel's encounter with the woman who came to Jesus' tomb. At noon, a traditional and special Angelus will take place, concluding the long program of Easter celebrations. In Rome, Benedict Siedegren, EWTN News Nightly.
This year marks one of the rare times that Catholic and Orthodox Christians celebrate Easter on the same day. And there's a reason for that. Catholics and most Christian denominations follow the Gregorian calendar established in 1582 by Pope Gregory XIII. For the Orthodox, they follow a different calendar, the ancient Julian calendar named after Julius Caesar and established in 46 BC. Because of discrepancies between the two calendars and the complex calculation of Easter, only rarely do they happen on the same date. So, is there any chance the two Easters might move to the same day permanently? For more, we turn to Gary Arndt, host of the Everything Everywhere Daily podcast and a world traveler who has studied this topic extensively. Gary, thank you so much for joining us. First off, how often do the Catholic and Orthodox Easters fall on the same day?
It happens usually about every 3 or 4 years, but there can be gaps as long as 8 years, and sometimes it can occur back-to-back years. So the last time this happened was 2017, and the next time it'll happen will be 3 years from now in 2028.
So then what does that mean for the different travel patterns at the Holy Land in terms of what happens there, pilgrimages, people going there?
Most of the pilgrims that go to Jerusalem are usually going to be coming from Orthodox countries simply because it's closer. I was there in 2009, actually, and there was a week gap between the Orthodox and Catholic Easter that year. And I remember being in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre when the Easter celebration was going on in the Catholic portion of the building, and the Palm Sunday service was going on in the Orthodox part of the building. So it does, I suppose, kind of split it up and allows for more people to attend by splitting up the Easters. But I think everybody kind of at least at some level wants to have the same Easter. And it's kind of been a problem for 500 years now.
Yes, it has. And it's significantly something that affects young children who are often confused. Is it your Easter or my Easter? There have been attempts, and I know this has been a big part of the Holy Father's pontificate, Pope Francis, over the years to make the Catholic and Orthodox Easter the same day. Is this something that's new on behalf of this pontificate or something we've seen over the last couple of years?
It's something that's always been there. So one of the easiest solutions, so the way Easter is currently calculated is they have an ecclesiastical equinox, which happens on March 21st, which can be slightly different from the astronomical equinox. And one of the proposals that's been put forward is that we simply use the astronomical equinox for the meridian on Jerusalem. And then the calendars don't matter. Everybody would have it at the same time. And this was proposed at a World Council of Churches conference in 1997, I believe. And nothing ever really happened with it. The Orthodox churches would have had to change their Easter a bit more the first years, and so they didn't want to do it. Another proposal that has been put forward is to simply pick a date. And so one date that's been proposed is the second Sunday in April. You'll be sure that Easter will always be after the equinox, and everybody can just put it on their calendar and use that. Nothing's also happened with that either. So as of right now, the last time the Orthodox and Catholic Easters will appear at the same date is the year 2700. So we have 700 years to figure it out.
Well, barring any successful attempt at unifying the two Easters in the name of Christian unity, when's the next time that they're going to be the same day?
Like I said, in 2028, and then we go through a period where every 3 years it's going to happen, 2031, 2034, 2037. And then as you go further into the 21st century, you get more of these gaps and then periods where they're even a little bit closer together. But it's usually every 3 or 4 years.
Well, hopefully that continued providence of dates coming together will inspire people to choose one and accept one of those proposals. Gary Arndt, host of the Everything Everywhere Daily podcast. Thank you so much. During this Easter, we're also encouraged to remember those who refused to renounce their faith and died as a result of it. In 2015, the militant group called the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, also known as ISIS, was carrying out a terror campaign in the Middle East and Africa. Their tactics were horrific. In February of that year, ISIS published the final moments of one Ghanaian and 20 Coptic Orthodox men working in Libya. ISIS militants had kidnapped the men in separate incidents, then forcibly marched them to a beach. There, all refused to renounce their faith before the militants executed them. But it was 10 years ago this week that ISIS recorded the murder of 30 Christians using the video in a propaganda production. In it, an ISIS spokesman argued that Christianity was both false and needed to be persecuted. Half of the victims were shot, while the rest were beheaded. The date was April 19th, 2015. Ethiopia declared 3 days of mourning. Pope Francis sent a message to the Patriarch of the Ethiopian Orthodox Tewahedo Church, saying that the blood of our Christian brothers and sisters is a testimony which cries out to be heard by everyone who can still distinguish between good and evil. EWTN contributor, former Ambassador Alberto Fernandez, explains why this event was so significant and why we should not forget it.
I think it's also important because it's the issue of persecution of Christians is still with us. It's all too easily forgotten. I saw a documentary that the Ethiopians did to mark the 10th anniversary, Ethiopian Orthodox Television did, and they asked, at the end of the documentary, they asked the question, brothers, would you be with the ones who remained steadfast or with the ones who apostatized and saved their lives? Because we forget that there were a few people who actually, to save their necks, converted to Islam to avoid being killed. Most of the Ethiopians remained faithful. This video was a kind of ideological critique of Christianity, from theology to history to modern relations. So it was by far the longest, most comprehensive bit of poison that the Islamic State produced about Christians, kind of inciting Muslims to be violent, to be extreme, to be intolerant towards Christians. In that sense, it's a unique document, a uniquely terrible, bad document in the history of ISIS propaganda.
An important reminder. We have a lot more still to come on this special edition of EWTN News Nightly. Blessed Carlo Acutis. The excitement surrounding the soon-to-be millennial saint is building, inspiring documentaries and music videos. The singer-songwriter of Corpus Christi talks to EWTN about his tribute to Blessed Carlo Acutis. Back to this special edition of EWTN News Nightly. Blessed Carlo Acutis will be canonized on April 27th, 2025, during the Jubilee of Teenagers in Rome, making him the first millennial saint. Despite his short life, Acutis left a formidable legacy and lasting impact on many because of his immense love for Jesus and the use of technology for the glory of God. Anthony Johnson from the EWTN Vatican Bureau has more.
During his life, Blessed Carlo Acutis was a computer coding teenager, but in death, he is the first millennial saint to be. Known for his devotion to Marian apparitions and Eucharistic miracles, he cataloged all of them on a website he designed. His mother says she knew her son will be canonized.
I'm not surprised because a few months after he died, he told me, Mama, I will in my dreams. He appeared to me in my dreams. And he said, Mom, I will be beatified and then I will be canonized. So I was already prepared.
Only 10 days after his diagnosis, Acutis died of a rare type of leukemia at the young age of 15. Despite the rapid progression of his illness and the fact he knew the end was near, the young boy showed a supernatural peace and readiness for death.
For Carlo, death was the passage to the true life. And for Carlo, his love was Jesus. So when you die, you meet Jesus. The only thing he used to say that we have to live like if each day of our life is the last day of our life. Mm. And he said that Carlo used to say that the only things we have to be scared is sin, because this can take us away for the eternity from Jesus.
Blessed Carlo made many pilgrimages to Assisi in Italy, and that is where his mortal remains rest. So it was fitting that Pope Francis chose the place as the site of the millennial's beatification, just 2 days shy of the 14th anniversary of Acutis' death. Since the day of his passing, thousands of people have come to pray for his intercession at his grave.
And we are very happy because we see that Carlo is doing a lot of good to people, and each year, each day, we receive a news of a possible miracle, healings, conversion, people that couldn't have the son or then became pregnant, or people that had no works, many different type of, especially healings, you know, and conversion. This is the most important for me, because eternal life is the most important thing.
In Rome, Anthony Johnson, EWTN News Nightly.
The life of Blessed Carlo Acutis is now the focus of a new documentary. The Boy from Milan, released April 2nd on Form to the Augustine Institute's Faith Formation streaming platform. It features interviews with three people impacted by Acutis' life story.
Carlo was a special young boy. He had an ordinary life, like most of everybody, but he opened the door of his heart to Jesus, and his ordinary life became extraordinary.
And for more, we turn to Emily Mentok, executive producer of The Boy from Milan, a documentary by the Augustine Institute. Emily, it's great to be with you. In announcing this 30-minute movie, you said that Blessed Carlo Acutis is known as the sneaker-wearing teenager who loved computers and gaming, but there's so much more to his story. What is that more you're talking about?
I think that we've heard so much about Blessed Carlo as God's influencer or because he played video games. But what we would really love for people to know, and what we're exploring in this documentary, is what did his daily life of holiness look like, so that we can be inspired to pursue that in our own lives as well.
And when you're thinking about this movie, you basically are telling the story of Carlo Acutis from the perspective of three people who knew him pretty well: his mother, one of his high school teachers, and one of his doctors who was with him through this journey. How did you find those three, and why did you choose these three?
Well, one thing that's really convenient about pursuing the story of someone who passed away so recently is that there's a lot of stories available. A hallmark of this series is that we want to tell the lives of modern saints by hearing directly from people who knew them personally. And so we were exploring different stories, but found that these three put together really told a unique story of who Carlo really was. And one of the things that stood out to us was how much he impacted each of their lives and really changed how they lived their faith and pursued holiness themselves. And that's what we hope to inspire the audience to do as well.
Yeah, very different interactions as a son, as a student, as a patient, right? Well, even secular media like the Associated Press is reporting on this phenomenon of tens of thousands of pilgrims flocking to see the body of Blessed Carlo in Assisi and the influence that that's having on all of the young people who are influenced by him. What should we be expecting for his canonization in late April?
You know, as the church becomes more global, we're seeing more and more people from all over the world have devotion to these people on the path to sainthood and to canonization. So one thing that really strikes me about Carlo and people's devotion to him and his reputation as an influencer for God is how appealing he is to people all over the world, and people of every generation. Of course, young people, people who are the same generation as him, like myself, and probably you as well, but also people who are just inspired by the witness of a young person who didn't shy away from holiness in our modern world and for all the challenges that it presents. So I'm really looking forward to seeing a global and diverse audience celebrate this young saint from Italy.
Do you think there's an urgency behind that outreach to younger generations that this soon-to-be saint is going to address, that's kind of fueling the Holy Father's urgency behind his canonization?
Well, you know, the church's process for picking saints is very complex and very rigid and strict for how they review, you know, the miracles that have been submitted for canonization. But I do think that I'm certain that the Vatican must be seeing and sensing the love that people have for Blessed Carlo and other young saints. And of course, you know, everyone in the church today would say that there is an urgency to continue to engage young people. That's the future of our church. And I'm really inspired by Carlo's example to show us what does that look like in modern times, less so because of his, you know, particular skills for building websites or that he loved to play video games, and more so for how he lived holiness even in a world with modern challenges, which really inspired me in telling this story and hopefully will inspire others as well.
Right, that walk with Jesus Christ no matter what circumstances you're in. Thank you so much. Emily Mentok, executive producer of The Boy from Milan, a documentary by the Augustine Institute. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
In honor of his upcoming canonization, EWTN On Demand is showing I Am With You, a documentary on Carlo Acutis, which is ours, our EWTN documentary, filmed on location in Italy. It introduces you to the family, the friends, the neighbors, the classmates who knew this impressive young man whose spiritual wisdom far surpassed his age.
Several years ago, all the Eucharistic miracles recognized by the Church were for the first time gathered and catalogued in an exhibition. Buenos Aires, Amsterdam, Paris, Valencia. 2,000 years of history, 2,000 years of presence. This exhibition on the Eucharistic miracles was devised by a child, Carlo Acutis.
Again, you can watch I Am With You, a documentary on Carlo Acutis on EWTN On Demand. From documentaries about Carlo Acutis' life to a song dedicated to the soon-to-be saint. Blessed Carlo Acutis is an inspiration to so many people. Most recently, a new music video was released which incorporated Acutis' passion for computers while expressing his undying love for the Eucharist. As you just saw, the video depicts Acutis working on his famous website cataloging Eucharistic miracles, entering the computer matrix and finding himself climbing the ladder of ascent, facing harassment from demons and receiving aid from angels as he makes his way toward heaven as if in a video game. Songwriter Stephen Becker composed this dedicatory piece after drawing inspiration from a visit to Santiago de Compostela, the destination of the Way of St. James, in 2019.
We have a song on our new single, Corpus Christi, and it name checks Carlo Acutis and has to do with Eucharistic miracles. And we wanted to make a video that would be a tribute to Blessed Carlo. And so it's in pixel art to honor his love of retro gaming through Carlo. I'm very grateful to Carlo. Through Carlo, God taught me about Eucharistic miracles. And that enhanced my faith.
Up next on this special edition of EWTN News Nightly, a masterpiece of early Christian art. We'll show you one of the most amazing archaeological discoveries since the Dead Sea Scrolls and where you can see it for yourself. Back to this special edition of EWTN News Nightly. Finally tonight, we head to the Museum of the Bible in Washington, D.C., where a historic archaeological find is being featured for a limited time, the Megiddo Mosaic. Abigail Galvan has more on the foundations of the early church from a time before Christianity was legally recognized by the Roman Empire.
I still get goosebumps when I talk about it.
It is one of the most amazing archaeological discoveries since the Dead Sea Scrolls, the Megiddo Mosaic. Israeli archaeologists discovered it in 2005.
So the Megiddo Mosaic Foundations of Faith is our current exhibit that we will have on display until July. It is in partnership with the Israel Antiquities Authority, and it is a mosaic floor of the earliest church ever discovered archaeologically. We call it the Megiddo Mosaic because it was found in the Megiddo prison, which is called the Megiddo prison today.
Until now, Israeli authorities prohibited the general public access to the artifact. But that changed when it went on display for the first time at the Museum of the Bible in Washington, D.C. The Megiddo Mosaic has attracted hundreds of visitors and evoked various reactions.
And then our guests, you know, I've seen from the range knowledge of just being more inquisitive about where did you find this and how did they uncover it and discover it. And then there are those who, again, it validates their faith, and that can be an emotional experience.
The mosaic features the first known archaeological evidence where Jesus Christ is acknowledged as God, about 100 years before it was declared doctrine by the Council of Nicaea. It also has another interesting feature.
You're standing in front of the two stones that held the communion table, or the Eucharist, And it validates what we've been practicing for over 1800 years, I believe is the time. So it's not only a validation, but it's an emotional experience.
Another aspect of the mosaic is the inscribed names of seven Christians fundamental to the building of the church: a Roman centurion, the artist, and five women.
This is a time when you have people from all different walks of life in this small room gathering. So really, it helps people imagine what must have been like to gather as Christians hundreds of years before Christianity was legalized.
The exhibit is meant for all ages, with displays allowing you to build your own mosaic, discover the early Christians behind the inscriptions, as well as learn about the archaeological discovery process. Visitors can see the mosaic until July to learn about the foundations of faith.
We're standing in front of where our forefathers had practiced the very same tradition that we practice today.
Abigail Galvan, EWTN News Nightly.
We thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Montse Alvarado. Good night, and God bless you.